Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text Number 5. Tatra,
Tatra,
Brahma Rishaya,
Brahma Rishaya,
Sarve,
Sarve,
Deva Rishaya,
Deva Rishaya,
Cha,
Cha,
Satama,
Satama,
Raja Rishaya,
Raja Rishaya,
Cha,
Cha,
Tatra San,
Tatra San,
Rastum,
Rastum,
Bharata,
Bharata,
Ungavam,
Ungavam.
Tatra Brahmarishaya Sarve
Tatra Brahmarishaya Sarve
Devarishasya Chasantama
Devarishasya Chasantama
Rajasayasya Tatrasan
Rajasayasya Tatrasan
Rasgumbhalata Pungavam
Rasgumbhalata Pungavam
Tatra Brahmarishaya Sarve
Tatra Brahmarishaya Sarve
Devarishasya Chasantama Rajasayascha tatrasan
Rajasayascha
tatrasan pungavam
Rasumbharata pungavam
Adravamarsaya
sarve Adravamarsaya
sarve Devasayascha satama Rajasayascha tatrasan Rasumbharata pungavam Tatra,
there,
Brahmarishaya,
Brahmarishaya,
receives among the Brahmanas,
receives among the Brahmanas,
Sarve,
Sarve,
all,
Devarishaya,
Devarishaya, receives among the demigods,
receives among the demigods,
Cha,
Cha,
and Satama,
Satama,
situated in the quality of goodness,
situated in the quality of goodness.
Raja Rishaya, Rishi is among the kings,
Rishi is among the kings,
Cha,
Cha.
And Tatra,
Tatra,
in that place,
Asan,
Asan, where present,
where present.
Rastum,
Rastum,
just to see,
just to see.
Bharata,
Bharata,
the descendants of King Bharata,
the descendants of King Bharata.
Pungavam,
Pungavam,
the chief of,
the chief of.
Translation. Just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharat, Bhishma, all the great souls in the universe, namely the rishis among the demigods, brahmanas and kings, all situated in the quality of goodness, were assembled there. Translation responsibly. Just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharat, Bhishma.
Just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharat, Bhishma.
All the great souls in the universe,
all the great souls in the universe,
namely the rishis among the demigods,
namely the rishis among the demigods,
brahmanas and kings,
brahmanas and kings,
all situated in the quality of goodness,
all situated in the quality of goodness,
were assembled there.
Were assembled there.
The rishis are those who have attained perfection by spiritual achievements. Such spiritual achievements can be earned by all, whether one is a king or a mendicant. Bhishma Dev himself was also one of the Brahma Rishis and the chief of the descendants of King Bharat. All Rishis are situated in the quality of goodness. All of them assembled there on hearing the news of the great warrior's impending death. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasasi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this chapter is entitled The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev. And prior to that, we've been seeing how at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna was ready to leave for Dwarka. And of course, we can see that sometimes things aren't really that chronological in the Bhagavatam. So first we hear the prayers that Queen Kunti was offering to Krishna to stop him from leaving. And then of course Yudhisthira Maharaj further pleaded with Krishna. And after Queen Kunti offered her prayers, still Krishna was prepared to leave. And then Yudhisthira Maharaj started pleading with Krishna and delaying Krishna. And because Krishna has one of the quality of being a genius, he fulfills unlimited desires by performing one act or one activity. So we've been hearing from different devotees this very important point that Srila Prabhupada always stressed, that there were great sages, there were different saints, Narada, Angira Muni, different saints, Vasistha. So many of them were present there to try to convince Yudhisthira Maharaj that actually it was not his fault that this great battle had ensued. And still he was not convinced, because you know, Krishna had a certain plan in mind. Krishna wanted to glorify both his devotees simultaneously. And of course, ultimately, Krishna himself would be glorified as being Bhaktavasana, because he always sees to the needs of his devotees. Krishna never forgets any act performed by his devotee. So Krishna allowed Yudhisthira Maharaj to be in so-called anxiety or ignorance of the reality of the battle of Kurukshetra. Therefore, he allowed this anxiety to carry on. Meanwhile, he knew that Bhishma Dev would have loved to see his grandsons, the Pandavas, being back on the throne. And at the same time, he would be able to impart spiritual knowledge to Yudhisthira Maharaj, because he is Bhishma Dev is one of the 12 Mahajans. So he would be able to impart religious principles to Yudhisthira Maharaj. And in different places, we see different order carriers are trying to explain different religious duties and responsibilities of humanity, different sages. The Yamadutas themselves, in the sixth canto, the pastime of Ajamil, we see in the purport in the beginning, in the first 20 verses, a Prabhupada, well, first the Bhagavatam is explaining, after hearing the description of the hellish palace and the different regions in the first canto, is explaining the different destinations and the living entities' propensity to want to be independent and want to enjoy separation from Krishna. And the result, of course, is that we get given different bodies, aided by time and the three modes of material nature, to actually fulfill these material or separate desires we have from Krishna. And the example then in the Shastra would be given of Ajamil. And of course, as we all know, the pastime Ajamil started off as a Brahmana situated in the mode of goodness. As this point, this verse is also speaking about how all rishis and Brahmanas are situated in the mode of goodness. He was performing his religious principles nicely, but because of a slight deviation, although performing his service, he got slightly contaminated, and therefore he started adopting non-Brahmanical qualities. And towards the end of his life, he was 80 plus, and he had a very young child called Narayan. And in the end, when his body had expired, he was calling out to Narayan. So the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas came at the same time. The Yamadutas, of course, couldn't understand why these effulgent personalities were there, because seemingly this person had been sinful. And while Ajamil was unconscious, of course he could hear that conversation that was going on. The Vishnudutas were asking the Yamadutas, okay, if you have come here to arrest this person and take him to your Lord, Yamaraj. What are religious duties and what are the religious principles? Because only irreligious personalities are taken to Yamaraj, and Ajana is not qualified. So can you substantiate your activities? And in that instance, we see how it is very important for all of us to know what actually religious duties and what are religious principles, so that we can act accordingly. What is real dharma? We should understand what cheating religion is, what Kaitava Dharma is. We should understand what Sanatana Dharma is, and we act accordingly. The Yamadutas, of course, we're quoting their authority, Yamaraj. And Prabhupada also likes that point very much, and he pointed it out that yes, in all our dealings we should be quoting Shastra. In everything that we do, we should be referring to the previous acharyas and their instruction on how to live accordingly as civilized human beings. And of course, as Brahmanas and as Vaishnavas, we should always take that example. So the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas were conversing in this manner, and religious principles once again were being reestablished. But the difference between that pastime and the pastime of Bhishma Dev and Yudhisthira Maharaj, of course we see how so many exalted personalities descended from the different universes. And this was the potency of Bhishma Dev as a Mahajan. This was the potency of Yudhisthira Maharaj. Prabhupada always explains, especially in relevance to Yudhisthira Maharaj, Maharaj Parikshit as well, that when the Raja Rishis were very powerful and were very potent, by their potency the demigods would descend on planet Earth. So by the spiritual qualification, they would enable even the normal or your everyday citizen to have darshan of the devatas because of their spiritual potency. So because they were such powerful kings and they were Krishna conscious, their kingdom flourished, and they were under the shelter and the protection of Krishna. So Yudhisthira is such a personality, Bhishma Dev is such a personality, that they were always in line with the desires of Krishna. So one may argue that fighting can actually be a religious duty. Or Arjuna himself, many people read Bhagavad Gita. I once met a lady by South Bank, she was from Bengal, and I showed her the Bhagavad Gita, and she almost just fainted. She was very upset. You know, she was telling me, what is wrong with you? You know, you look like a very intelligent girl. You're reading this book, it's based on war. It is a fratricidal war, and this Arjuna, he killed so many people. And Krishna, this prince called Krishna, he was a coward. He was just on the chariot, he didn't do anything. This Bhagavad Gita is a nuisance in society. So she was blaspheming on and on. And very proud that, you know, she was a Mayavadi. You know, everything is just, it's all one, it's all illusion. It's nice, it's phantasmagoria, it's very nice, it's very stimulating, but at the end of the day, it amounts to nothing. So she was going on in her blasphemy, and then I tried to make her understand, you know, if someone comes, you know, you're a mother, if someone comes to rape your child or slaughter your child, are you just going to stand there and do nothing? So when religious principles are trying to be abolished, Krishna and his devotees don't just stand in the back, in the mode of goodness, and say, yes, you know, what do we do? We're very peaceful, we're very shanta, we're very mild, we're equipoised, we do not act. But Bhishma Dev, Yudhisthira Maharaj, the Pandavas were very Krishna conscious in their specific duty. They were Kshatriyas. So in their fighting spirit, they were thinking of Krishna. And because Krishna has so much variety, there's not only one way of having a relationship with Krishna. So in nectar of devotion, this point is clearly explained of what the different rasas Krishna has with his devotee. And in the Bhagavatam as well, in the first chapter, it explains the primary rasas and the secondary rasas that Krishna has. And one of those, of course, is chivalry, in which Bhishma Dev was situated under. And that devotional service he was performing primarily to please Krishna. because Krishna has that relationship with him, so he knew that if he acts in a certain way, Krishna is going to be pleased. Arjuna knew on the battlefield of Kurukshetra that by fighting he is pleasing Krishna. If he was going to be a false renunciate and go to the forest and take up sannyas, that would be false renunciation, and that is displeasing to Krishna. So his meditation should have been performing his activities for the pleasure of Krishna. And this is what Bhishmadev was doing simultaneously, instructing Yudhisthira Maharaj and also giving pleasure to Krishna. So this is the life of a devotee, that you get to a state after performing your sadhana, of course, sadhana, vaidhi sadhana bhakti. We get to the point of spontaneously serving Krishna under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. And in that pleasing mentality, we don't put ourselves at the center. Krishna is the center. And that is why Krishna derives such bliss and satisfaction, because his devotees are putting him as the center. So devotees get a lot of satisfaction by serving Krishna first, and then Krishna reciprocates by pleasing his devotees. So when Krishna descends to the material world, he brings along with himself his different shaktis, his different potencies. And when a devotee is qualified, Krishna allows that devotee to be controlled by the internal potency. So sometimes the pure devotee gets covered, or the pure devotee gets saturated with this internal potency, and they are used by Krishna to perform his duty of re-establishing religious principles. So sometimes Krishna himself doesn't have to come. He sends his empowered parts and parcels to spread the Sankirtan movement or to spread his glory. So he did this once again with the personality of Yudhisthira Maharaj. When Yudhisthira Maharaj was performing the Rajasuya Yajna, of course, Prabhupada mentions that in this age it is very difficult to perform such a yajna, because it means that all the great all the kings, or right now all the presidents, should submit to only one ruler, one emperor, and fall at his lotus feet and abide and be under his authority, well, in this day and age, his or her authority. So in Kali Yuga that wouldn't really go well, because everyone is saturated, or everyone is driven by the false conception of the bodily concept of life. Specifically, I am the body, I'm from here and I'm from there. So when Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing this Rajasuya Yajna, he wasn't actually performing it for himself to be seen as a great king. Prabhupada explains in that section in Krishna book, we can all read it, that he wanted to establish the glories of Krishna. So Prabhupada explains Yudhisthira Maharaj as a preacher, as a Sankirtan devotee, that he was there to establish the glories of Krishna. And he did this by the Rajasuya Yajna and by performance of the Agra Puja. The most exalted personality would be worshipped first. That was the whole point Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to highlight, actually, that the most exalted person is Krishna. And similarly, at that situation also, all the different rishis, all the different devatas descended from the upper planetary systems by his potency, and they came to witness this event. So this is the character of Yudhisthira Maharaj, that he was such an exalted devotee of Krishna. Well, sometimes we may read, it was very striking, while reading the prayers of Queen Kunti and seeing her level of surrender to Krishna, seeing her attachment to Krishna. Or we read of the pastimes of Lord Kapila Dev and his mother, Devahuti, Prabhupada explaining that it's not that Devahuti was attached to her son, but she was attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead instructed her, and then he left. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, he pleaded with Krishna, like, Krishna, don't leave. Right? Bhishmadev made Krishna come to that where he was laying in the bed of arrows. So if the devotees unmotivated bhakti that calls Krishna, it is not a devotee's previous material qualification. It is not by a devotee's renunciation in terms of being austere. It's not by, you know, karma or jnana. These are not considered by Krishna. Krishna is bhakta vatsala. So it is by bhakti that one can actually call Krishna. One can actually bring Krishna into one's heart. So the nature of the external energy is that it, of course, it is a deluding energy. It covers our subtle body by giving us such a gross conception of life. And in that way, we consider material things to be very dear and near to our heart. So we keep name, fame, prestige very close to us. And sometimes when we take up the process of bhakti, the traces of this name and fame, this prestige, is still lingering. But the more we perform bhakti, the more we hear and chant, Srila Prabhupada explains in the sixth canto that actually our liberation will come from the hearing and chanting about Krishna. The more we hear and chant, the more the false conception of living in the material world is nullified. So the false ego is actually extinguished by the process of devotional service. Not even the process of mystic yoga or the process of jnana can actually get rid of the false ego. The false ego gets rid when you actually submit to the authority called Krishna, the Vedic literatures. So although some people might say they study Vedanta or the Vedanta Sutras, the end of all knowledge, as Gangadhar Prabhu was saying yesterday, some people don't even know what they study Vedanta, but they don't know what Vedanta actually means. Or some people follow the Ashtanga Yoga process, and then you ask them, what is this Samadhi you're talking about? Who are you focusing on? Who are you fixed on? And they say, I'm just fixed, I'm in meditation. What are you in meditation of? In meditation of the self. You keep asking them what the self is, what the soul is, what they actually can't say. So it is very important that we understand actually and not be sidetracked in this point that actually it is only the process of bhakti that can get rid of the false ego. And that is a product of Krishna's mercy. So we can try by ourselves. Most yoga processes, of course, is by your own strength, your own determination. You're thinking about how I can do this by myself. As Prabhupada would explain, you go up the ladder and then you kick the ladder. And the person who's holding it, some processes are like that. He mentioned that specifically about the some sects of the Christian faith, that they have a teacher, they have the Bible, they have Christ. They get up the ladder, then as soon as they get up, they kick the ladder. So, in bhakti, it is actually not just by our own endeavor. The Pandavas are showing that, and Bhishma Dev also, they are showing that in whatever circumstance, in whatever situation, if Krishna is on your side, you will emerge victorious. So although you had great personalities like Bhishma, still the most powerful warrior on the side of the Kurus, Duryodhana's camp, in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions that even in the Bhagavatam, even if you're the most powerful personality, but if you are not favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you will not be victorious. And he gave the example of Bhishma. Not on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was on the opposing side. But Krishna was on one side, he was on the other side. There is no way that he would emerge victorious in terms of the battle. But in terms of his bhakti, in terms of the depth of his service to Krishna, he was victorious. For he had darshan of Krishna just before he decided to quit his body. Yudhisthira Maharaj also their entire life was dedicated to showing that we living in the material world shouldn't be under the false impression that because I am chanting Krishna's name and because sometimes I have darshan of Krishna, everything will be smooth. There will be no obstacles in bhakti. Actually, there will be obstacles in bhakti because we're performing it in the material realm. We're situated in the material world. We are victimized by the adiatmika sesha, adibhautika. We're victimized by time. We're victimized by the modes of material nature. We're victimized by our mind. So these things are there. And the Pandavas are showing also they were victimized by time, they were victimized by so many different types of calamities to show that yes, you are sheltered by Krishna, but at the same time, being in the material world, it won't always be an easy ride. Therefore, we have to fully surrender to Krishna and understand that Krishna is supremely independent, so he reciprocates whenever he wants and however he wants to. And Lord Chaitanya says, even if you make me brokenhearted by not being present before me, I'm still your unconditional servant, birth after birth. So the Pandavas for 14 years, this is dead. The Pandavas for 14, you know, they were exiled, they were killed, they were literally just banished from society. And they were still Krishna conscious. So this is a great lesson for us. That through thick and thin we should always be Krishna's devotee. You know, hell, the sky will open, you know, it will rain bones and bile and mucus. And, you know, sometimes Bhagavatam explains these things, bad omens. We may see them there. This is Kali Yuga. We shouldn't be shocked when we hear that people are cannibals eating each other, murdering, slaughtering within the same family, etc. This is Kali Yuga. This is normal, by the way. This is the degraded consciousness of Kali Yuga. This is just to show that the center of existence is not Krishna, because if Krishna was the center of existence, everything flourishes. Even from Krishna's birth, we read in Krishna book how, you know, lotuses were opening at night. The constellations completely restructured themselves. Different flowers were coming into season, although they weren't supposed to be in season. The rivers were flowing. You know, everything was becoming so effulgent because Krishna was appearing. And the more Krishna becomes prevalent in society, the more the modes of material nature won't have so much of an effect on people. But as long as people are under Tamagun and Rajagun, their sense of inquiry reduces. That's why Bhagavatam explains that when the consciousness shrinks in Kali Yuga, even the height of people will shrink. And that is to show just how degraded consciousness becomes. And people will be considered old when they live up to the age of 20 or 21. So this is Kali Yuga. And this is what's going to happen. So the pastime of the Pandavas is showing us that we should become Paramahamsas. And Bhagavatam, it says it is for the Paramahamsa personalities. So a Paramahamsa, a swan-like personality, although seemingly engrossed in turmoil, is able to extract the nectar from that. Although Kali Yuga is a bad bargain, Mandasu Mandamatayo, this complete madness, we are unlucky, it's an ocean of faults. Although that is Kali Yuga, Krishna has, in his hidden form as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has descended to give himself in his Harinam Sankirtan Yajna. So in every age, the different yajnas we perform, we cannot, you know, the Krishna Consciousness Movement cannot perform the Rajasriya Yajna. We cannot perform so many different yajnas, but this yajna has been prescribed by Krishna himself. not an incarnation of Krishna. Krishna has come himself as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's prescribing, this is how you make spiritual advancement, by taking up this Sankirtan Yajna. And the more we perform this Sankirtan Yajna, the more we'll be successful as individuals practicing Krishna consciousness, and as a society propagating Krishna consciousness. So this verse also mentions one point about being on the quality of goodness. So the great sages, the demigods, oftentimes to be explained to be in the quality of goodness. And by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, he has given us a process that actually elevates one beyond the mode of goodness, but into the mode of pure goodness, with the consideration that we actually take the medicine as ordained by the chemist or the physicist. So the process of hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna elevates us beyond the mode of goodness. Because Krishna meaning himself, his name, his attributes, is never at any point touched by rajagun, tamagun, or sattvagun. So Krishna is eternally Sat-Chit Ananda. Unlike the mighty jiva who gets covered because we're marginal potency, we misuse our intelligence, Krishna is always Sat-Chit Ananda. And he has different shaktis to display that Sat-Chit Ananda aspect of himself. So when we hear about Krishna, we're directly hearing spiritual vibrations. Although, you know, it's letters, we may think it's letters of the alphabet, etc., etc. But if we're hearing from the right source, from a devotee of Krishna, then we're in direct contact with Shabda Brahman, or the spiritual sound vibration. So this is what was revealed to Lord Brahma in the heart in 4 seed verses. Of course, he had to explain them further for all of us to be able to understand what Bhagavatam is about. So the process of hearing from great and sainted persons coming in the proper line is very important. There can be many personalities repeating the words of the Bhagavatam and having an impersonal understanding that has no potency. Krishna unmanifests himself. I once heard a lecture by His Holiness Kanan Makanda Swami, and he was explaining, of course he gave the example Prabhupada always gives, that is, if we hear from unauthorized sources, it is very poisonous, like the milk touched by the tongue of a serpent. Although it looks like the same thing, but it is actually very poisonous. So he was explaining, of course sometimes he gives extreme examples. He was explaining that he wouldn't even be in the same room if anyone, because sometimes, you know, we get invited to different places, sometimes some Mayavadi schools, they want us to do some chanting, some this and that, and he's very strong on them and saying Prabhupada stressed very much that even if you see them walking on the same road, you cross and go over to the other side. Of course, Prabhupada is trying to say we should be very, very strict with association. Make sure that we're hearing from the right person. And when Lord Chaitanya was asked, what is a Vaishnav? He said, Asat Sangatyan. And so he qualified a devotee in terms of association. So our association tells us what type of progress we'll make, what type of advancement we'll make, whether we'll remain stagnant or whether we'll flourish in Krishna's service. So it's something to keep in mind. Sometimes we're out there preaching not to become swayed or not to lessen or dilute our Krishna consciousness on the strength of preaching. So Prabhupada is very strong on us chanting the holy name, giving prasadam, and speaking something. Not that we just go and sit there and smile at everyone. but we have to speak something and present Krishna. This is what Prabhupada said. He wrote the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam for different reasons, but one of the main ones is to present Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we shouldn't be swayed by anything else. Okay, I'll stop here and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. Yes,
definitely. Vishnu was in the eighth Vasu. The eight Vasus were first to take birth in the material world. Seven of his brothers died straight away after birth. Their mother killed them. So I can't remember the actual reason why he was cursed to take birth. Do you know?
Sorry. Also, when we read Krishna's pastimes, we should always remember that we are learning about Krishna's tattva, his eternal position, and we're also learning about Krishna's rasas. So sometimes the pastimes are combined with tattva and rasa. So Krishna establishes himself, establishes his devotees, but it also mixed with a certain rasa. Like we know the pastime of Jai and Vijay, the Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu or Dantavakta Kumbha, they're not just demons, it's fulfilling Krishna's rasa. He wanted to fight. So sometimes we see from that angle, it may look like, oh, this sage cursed this person and he became Bhishma, it was because of that curse. And you hear this all the time when you watch these Mahabharata series in India. Like, oh, this happened in the Mahabharata, etc., etc. But they're not seeing the rasa because they don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Person. They don't understand the different types of rasas Krishna has in his pastimes. So especially with the Pandavas, there's so many rasas, there's so many pastimes, you know, why he, you know, gave the hint to Bhima to bifurcate this demon, or why, you know, so many different rasas within Krishna's leelas that should be understood. And that makes us understand the position of Krishna as the inconceivable personality of Godhead. So we have to understand the tattva. That's why we have all these cantos explaining creation, sub-creation, movement of the planets, etc. We understand, okay, this is the absolute truth. And then we also understand his rasa, his dealing with the different shaktis. You can ask this, some senior devotee to explain that pastime of Vishnu.
Thank you for remembering class, Guru. I'm afraid I'm a bit lost in the example of Srila Prabhupada avoiding the association of the Maivadis from Kadamkan and Maharaj. Can you just clarify that?
The examples Prabhupada gave was that we shouldn't even be in the same room with them. We shouldn't just even hear from them. Even if they're chanting the holy name in a program, Bhagavad Saptaha, which happens very often in India and in Australia. There have been a few Bhagavad Saptaha that have happened, thousands of people going. But in the end, we're all one. Right? Flowery language, and sometimes they even quote so many shlokas, much better than devotees. So if we're still, like myself, if you're still a neophyte, you go and hear them, you're thinking, wow, this is far out, they know what they're talking about. And then I start watering down my own practice of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada specifically wanted that we don't hear from these personalities, because they become poisonous. So that's why he'd say, if you see them on the road, very respectfully go on to the other side. Don't associate with them, even if they are chanting Hare Krishna. It is tinged with poison. Especially kirtan. You might know that there's a huge kirtan scene and lots of people who don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Person chant Hare Krishna. And of course, most of it is a personal choice if devotees are want to go hear from those persons because they have wonderful voices, you know, very attractive, etc. But we should always remember what Prabhupada said specifically on people who are not accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Say when you're in a conversation with someone and they start telling their philosophy and it's like my life philosophy, do we try and tell them about break their philosophy down to Krishna consciousness?
Okay, if someone starts ranting on about Mayavadism, and if it's a random person you've never spoken to before, or if it's something, or if it's someone that you know, what I normally do, if that helps, I just change the topic. Sometimes it is very difficult. I personally find it is very difficult to listen to people go on and on about nothing, especially when they start becoming a bit offensive towards, even if they don't know that they're being offensive, I just quickly change the topic. So they might be going on about, you know, there is no, the ego of the self and the supreme is all one. And I just change the topic. I just tell them, oh, what do you think of the prasadam? I'll start asking them questions that are very Krishna conscious. I'll start asking them about different opulences of Krishna. That one always works. I'll start asking them, how do you understand, the potency of the sun and the moon? Isn't it amazing that things open and close up? This is the energy, I start asking them indirect things, because if I go directly, if I start getting very, very personal about Krishna, then because they don't have faith, they might commit offenses unknowingly. So I redirect the conversation. But gradually over time, when you become stronger in philosophy and when you become very confident, you can present to them the philosophy that, okay, it's interesting you're saying that everything is nothing is by chance. This Bhagavad Gita explains that, everything is emanating from Krishna. Just like from electricity, you have the microwave which gives you heat, and you have the fridge that freezes things, but it's from the same source. What do you think about that? And then in that way you stir the conversation. Yes,
brother?
Sorry, what was that?
How did you end up with that conversation?
Oh, with that lady from Bengal. I gave her my number. She went to Crossface. She wanted to speak more about the Bhagavad Gita. Her main, very proud. No, but if there's pride, you can't actually learn. If you talk all of you actually can't learn anything. So that was their problem. So I didn't waste time with her. So she was still under the impression that Krishna, it is mythology. In this Mahabharata business, it is all mythology. And you should focus on becoming one with God. We are the one. Like, you are the one, I'm the one, you are the one, you are the one. So that was her philosophy. So I met her once and then that was it. I didn't waste time with her. Some people are like that.
So I was curious, you already started a conversation once you have questioned what if somebody attacks his son or daughter kind of thing.
She became very defensive. It was actually a very fired up discussion because South Bank, so many people are walking past, and I think Bhakti Lata was a bit further, and one other Mataji was there, and she was very aggressive. And one Sankirtan Samrat said we should always keep our cool because people are watching what devotees are doing. So I was like very soft and like, okay, let's calm down. No, let's just talk about it. And she was getting angry. Very, very angry. Like, you're an intelligent girl. Like, yeah, fuck. Like, it explains it the most. I was being very sarcastic in a very nice way. And that didn't go well. But then I was very, very nice to her. In the end, she gave me a hug and said, I'll see you some other time. But she was more agitated. She was a very passionate person. Yeah, some you learn how to deal with different people. Okay. Thank you very much for collaborating with me. Okay. Shri Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.